Hello, this is Barbara Peters, and I'm talking to Mariana Evans, a Poison Pen Press author, who is working on her 15th book in her wonderful series, The Fay Longchamp Archaeological Mysteries. Ooh, I said that with a French accent. Can I do that?
Well, Fay doesn't, but you can.
That's very true. I can hardly resist. Longchamp is such a wonder. And actually, why is she called Longchamp? Is there that whole rum triangle? Is she the descendant of slaves?
She is the descendant of slaves. Now, the Longchamp, part of her family, were white. And so she's a woman of mixed ancestry, and her her father's family has some ancestry in New Orleans among plantation owners, and so she has this internal conflict about her history that will always be with her, even in her last name.
Fascinating stuff, and you're right, New Orleans actually has classifications for people of mixed race, octoroon, quadroon, because of the balance, how much blood from each side of the family comes in. So she, what would you call her? Well, an octoroon?
I know. I think it's most, if I had to quantify it, I'd say she's about half European ancestry, half African ancestry, and a little bit of Creek ancestry. And so I think she's just herself.
I don't think
she has had to live with the society's perception of who she is all her life, and I think that that's something that she carries with her.
So when we first met her, she is the owner, or has inherited a plantation called Joyeuse, which is old and in constant disrepair, and she's trying to scratch out a living for herself and keeping the house going by pot hunting.
Yes.
An illegal occupation.
That's right. She was fascinated with archaeology. She had some archaeological training, but didn't have the money to finish her degree. And she had inherited this house with many fascinating finds buried around it. And she justified it through her own ethical code that these artifacts were her inheritance. They belonged to her ancestors, and that it was perfectly okay for her to dig them up, sell them on the black market, and preserve this home that was built by her enslaved ancestors.
So who is Callie?
Callie is one of her enslaved ancestors. It's Fay's great-great-grandmother, who left behind an oral history in the 1930s, which it comes from truth. The WPA writers went out and found surviving former slaves and took their oral histories and preserved this fabulous body of material from the mouths of the people who lived this terrible life, and also the lives that they were able to build for themselves after emancipation. So once I learned that this existed, I gave Fay this ancestress, and I gave Fay her oral history as a gift. It's one of her greatest treasures, is knowing how Callie lived before and after emancipation.
And so in the books, you generally had some kind of record from the past, whether written or in some other form, that is part of the story, so that we can plunge back into the past through whatever this is, a diary or letters. One of the books I remember had some wonderful letters written during the time of the Civil War, and that was one way we were able to get back into the past.
Yes, well, you know, when I began writing about an archaeologist, I realized, you know, well, they don't dig all the time. And they do a lot of work cataloging, which I've had Fay do, and writing reports. But also, they spend a lot of time with documentary research. And so, I've used an oral history. I've used multiple oral histories, journal entries, letters, other kinds of documents that she, rare books, that she has to go to the rare book library to find. And so I try to make it realistic. Field notes. I've had her solve a mystery by reading the field notes of a missing archaeologist.
So, and you've taken her to all kinds of interesting sites. She's been in St. Augustine. She's been in upstate New York, where the women's right, you know, the Seneca Falls area. She's been in Alabama. Mm-hmm. She's been, of course, in Florida, in the 10,000 Island district where she lives. You've done at least one book in Oklahoma. In fact, two, right. Let's talk about Catacombs, which is the most recently published, the 14th one. What was the back history story of catacombs?
Well, I've moved to Oklahoma relatively recently, and I had written Burials, which was a more traditional archaeological novel where Faye is on a dig, she finds a body. It's in a rural setting. So I wanted to look at urban Oklahoma, which people don't think about when they think of Oklahoma. But Oklahoma City is quite cosmopolitan, and it has a short history because Oklahoma is one of the newer states. And so I started reading about the history of Oklahoma City, and I found that the Chinese community that came over to build the railroads had representatives in Oklahoma City, and because of prejudice and lack of money, they lived in basement apartments and tunneled out to enlarge their apartments and eventually created an underground city that had as many as 200 people living underneath the city. And I thought, if I can't make a book out of that for an archaeologist, I am no writer.
Very true. And in fact, you know, I mean, there are other underground cities. Seattle's is maybe the best known, where you can actually do it as a tourist attraction. But certainly, you know, having the Chinese living, as you say, tunneling out and living underground gave you a magnificent place to discover things. What was the thing that took us back to that time that Faye found? Was it the paintings?
It was, well, you know, because I'm very fortunate in the Oklahoma City Underground in that we cannot currently access it. It was last accessed in 1969. We have photos, which I used in the book, described in the book, but I was able to create what I wanted to down there. And so there was, in the one of the opening scenes of the book, there is a bomb in a historic hotel, and it opens up this lost world that we haven't seen in 50 years. And Faye is first brought in because they're interested in how old is it, how was it built, all these things that an archaeologist would know. And then they find a fabulous room covered with paintings, floor, ceiling, walls, and three dead bodies. And so the FBI desperately needs Faye's expertise to explain those paintings.
I thought the paintings were in many ways the most imaginative of your links to the past, that we could, you know, see what was going on through a visual medium rather than, you know, through words, whether written or recorded, which has been what we've mostly had to work with. There's a very interesting book by S.J. Roseanne that came out this year also, called Paper Sun, set in Mississippi, where it turns out there was also a substantial Chinese community. You wouldn't think of Mississippi as having one. And again, probably the railroads are what brought Chinese immigrants. Yep, and they stayed there. And I mean, I've traveled, as you know, all around the world to all continents, and there's hardly a place you can go where there hasn't been a Chinese community, whether they were there for railroads or whether they were there for mining. And I remember one in New Zealand was particularly sad. There's a whole cemetery, and a lot of these people came there in order to try to make money to send back home to their families, and they were never able to leave, and so they died there. They died far from home, far from the people that loved them. And, you know, they have a really, I think, a sort of global history of migration, and often never got to return home.
That was true of the Chinese community in Oklahoma City. Right. They came over to build the railroads. It was mostly men, because the idea was they would come over, make money, and probably go home or else send for their family, and they were not able to do either. That's just a lost group of people that I find very sad.
Right.
I'm from Mississippi and knew people from the Chinese community, went to graduate school with them. And it was Mississippi River ports was a big, and then there's a large Vietnamese community on the coast,
right,
which is more ports. So it makes it more cosmopolitan.
It's been fascinating. I think, you know, you have brought different parts of the country and different cultures. It's been a real pleasure as well as a challenge to edit your books. but it's been a great learning experience. And, you know, things have come my way that might have completely skipped by me. Just because, I mean, you can't learn everything. You know?
No, now you have to choose.
You do. So I find that fascinating. Now, you and I have just been working on your 15th book for Faye. And this time, because you are an engineer by training, you're the only author I know who's a mechanical engineer,
chemical.
Right? Chemical engineer, right? who, because oftentimes that is a side of the brain that doesn't necessarily work well in the creative arts, and yet you somehow managed to fuse it all together. And this is one where some of your technical or engineering expertise comes into play, because we're looking at a shipwreck and we're looking at diving, deep sea
yes.
diving and other things. Did you have to learn a lot in order to write that, or was this stuff you already knew?
I did, because I don't dive. I have friends who dive, and so I knew enough from association. I also lived in Florida, where there are many divers. I already knew enough to start to ask the right questions. And so I have a friend who had a business as an environmental consultant, and some of their work was diving, so I spoke to her. Also, she could answer questions for me, like, I got this guy, he's 25 years old, he's got a lot of money, he's a jerk, what does his boat look like?
Mm.
So we had that conversation, and then she put me in touch with a man who does dive rescue and knows quite a lot about the details of the tanks and the equipment, and he
sure.
helped me.
If you want to kill somebody while they're diving, how would you go about
it? That's right, because most people don't ask that question. And so I had to, that's the reason I went through a friend, because when I go through a friend, they can say, she's not really trying to kill somebody. She's just writing a book about it.
I also like the drone technology. I think Faye's husband, Joe, who is a Muscogee Creek,
mm-hmm.
right? We'll come back to that in a minute. Has a lot of old school skills. I mean, you know, he's great at things like napping and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, Joe has, you know, leapt into 21st century technology here. He has a drone. He calls it Ossie. It's like a bird. And I thought you must have had a great time with that.
Oh, I did. Once I wanted to use the drone, because summer before last, I loved the drone pictures in England where they had the drought, and you could see the prehistoric, you know,
the Roman roads,
Roman roads,
yeah.
Paleolithic hinges. And I thought, I'm going to use that. So I decided they needed a drone, and then I just thought, Joe would love this, even though he's very much not a 21st century person in a lot of ways. He would be willing to learn to use it, because it's such a cool way to see the natural world.
It is a cool way to see it. I also love the way that, you know, he doesn't want to embrace cloud technology. He's happy with the drone, but he can't quite see the point of having his pictures stored in hyperspace or wherever they go. And so, you know, fortunately, he prints some of them out.
That's right. Yeah, because his personality furthered the plot for me, which always makes me happy. But I thought Joe would not have done a very good job of keeping up with his files, and that becomes an information management problem, which is very important to writing mysteries. Who has the information? How does the heroine get it? What information does the killer have? And so Joe's distrust of the cloud was very useful.
It was very useful. I think another question too is, you know, what information is pertinent?
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the hard things for an investigator to figure out, is what is the information that matters to
mm-hmm.
the investigation, and what of it is just sort of like noise.
And as the writer, it's my job to throw out the noise.
Exactly, and obscure the real information. So back to Joe. Faye, as we've already discussed, is of mixed ancestry. Joe is at Muscogee Creek. Joe is, what, 11 years younger than Faye?
Nine years younger than Faye.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Somewhere in this book, you say 11 twice, so make a note that you fix that. Yes.
I thought it was nine.
Sorry,
okay.
Editorial conference here just at the moment. I remember 11 because I thought they really weren't that far apart. But anyway,
no, right.
So Joe is younger than Faye, and so one of the big issues for them was, you know, should they have a child, and was
mm-hmm.
she too old to be
mm-hmm.
Successfully, not too old to be a mom, but was she too old to be pregnant and
right.
not have some kind of tragedy
mm-hmm.
come out of that? And they have an adopted daughter, but in this book, Catacombs, that we were talking
mm-hmm.
about, Joe's family comes in. They have before. His
mm-hmm.
father, from whom he was kind of estranged, has come in before in burials, right?
Right, and isolation.
And isolation.
Yeah.
But in this book, Joe has a distant relative who's a Hollywood star
yes.
who makes it to Oklahoma City. And I really like the way you wrote about, you know, the way Hollywood and Native Americans, you know, how, what kind of relationship they had, and what could Native Americans do in the movies, other than just get shot by arrows in westerns.
Oh yeah, for decades that's what the Native American role was in movies, was to be the enemy and to be the fodder, you know, gun fodder. And but it, you know, in the 60s, the, you know, there was a change, and where there were more meaty roles with complexity and more positive roles for Native American actors. And so I created a man who was just the right age to have arrived in Hollywood, and was an extra. And then when the roles came, he was ready for them.
Right.
And so if anybody knows Wes Studi, this would be a really great role for him if they ever make this a movie.
Wouldn't that be fun? I love the fact that he became a star, and so he comes back to Oklahoma City in kind of search of things from his past. He's also retiring, so to speak, and he brings his longtime associate with him. So they become part of what happens to Faye, is that not only does she have to deal with the Chinese community, but there's a whole Native American arts fair thing that goes on, and a lot of protest and resistance to that. So you worked in a great deal into the plot of Catacombs.
It was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And the fact that you are now living and teaching in Oklahoma probably broadened your Oklahoma horizon.
Oh, absolutely. It was very, it's, you know, and then when I start talking about this book, anybody that has lived in Oklahoma all their life or near Oklahoma City, they've heard of the Chinese underground community. And they go, oh, you're writing about that. There was a really nice article in a local newspaper, and people would read it, and I would get emails, my father told me this and such. So it's very much a part of oral history in the community. And then there are documents that prove that it was true. There was a health department visit that's documented in 1921. There were photos taken in 1969. So it has the benefit of being an urban legend that is true.
Which is absolutely wonderful. One of your early books, I'm trying to remember, was it the third or the fifth? You won a Mississippi Book Award for writing about a different Native American community in Mississippi.
Yeah, that was the third one. And I wrote about the Choctaws in Mississippi on their reservation near Philadelphia. And I'm from Mississippi, and it took me a while to figure out a story that was the one I wanted to tell about my home. And so Philadelphia and Neshoba County is considered the home of the Choctaw Nation. There's a mound there that they consider their mother, that they believe they came out of the ground there. Part of the tribe stayed at the time of the Trail of Tears because they wouldn't leave their mother. And so the Choctaws are divided. There are Oklahoma Choctaws and Mississippi Choctaws. And there was just so much rich material in that area that I went several times because I felt like this was an important story. I didn't want to get wrong. So I went 5 times to Neshoba County and spoke to their archivist and spoke to their archaeologist, visited the Mother Mound several times, and I have a soft spot for that book.
It's a very good book. Someone that has the cover I can't stand, but hopefully we'll get it repacked.
Ignore the cover.
Ignore the cover is dreadful, but maybe, you know, we can fix that.
It's called Effigies.
Effigies, right. Yes. So the skull.
Yes.
Oh, right. I think the one where you went furthest afield was the one where you went to upstate New York.
Yes.
Which I thought was a fascinating story. I've always loved a series by Miriam Grace Manfredo. It started with a book called Seneca Falls that actually took place in the mid-19th century. And she was very, very good about writing about the position of women and their lack of control over their money and their bodies and their children and all the rest of it, and the movement that came out of Seneca Falls. And you chose a slightly different path for Faye. She went up there to do a different project for her little fledgling. Once she turned respectable, she went from potholder to actual archaeologist.
Yes.
Yeah, you sent her to graduate school.
Right. She has a doctorate. She's legitimate. She's published. She does all the things. But she didn't want to go into academia. She has a consulting firm.
Right.
She does cultural resources management, and it's a small firm, and you take the jobs that you can you get. And so, early on, I had an archaeologist friend who recently passed, who gave me some wisdom. He gave every time I talked to him, there'd be wisdom that I took for the rest of my career. And when I went to write the second book, I had this great plot figured out. He says, "That's real interesting. Who's going to pay her to go? Who's going to pay for the dig?" And so every time I start a book, I have to come up with a history I wanted to explore, and I have to come up with a reason that will finance it. And so, so with her little firm, she takes sometimes tiny little jobs. And in that, I wanted to get her to upstate New York because I wanted to talk about the spiritualist community that started up there. And so I created a little town and modeled on the real Lilydale, which is where the spiritualists started. And every little town has a museum. They just do. And so I had the town hire her to come and curate their museum.
Right.
And that got her up there to where she could work with these people that read palms and have crystal balls and speak to spirits. And that was a lot of fun to write.
It was fun. You also enjoyed fire. Arson was
yes.
a big player in that book,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, different than guns, knives. And you have to be, if you're writing a long series, you have to come up with different ways to kill people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I've never wanted to do the really weird ways to kill people. You know, in that book, somebody tried to kill somebody with candy. But other than that, it's a fire, it's a gun, it's a knife. But the reasons are not always obvious.
No, they're not. You also have to have a resolution that's within Faye's grasp, whether
mm-hmm.
she herself is doing it. And I think I'll end this by, you know, reminding me, because I always love this story of the wicked librarian. We won't identify which book. And she was such a wicked librarian that at the end of the book, it became clear that nobody was ever going to bring her to justice for her crimes. And she's putzing off in a boat. And you, in the original version, you had Faye bravely take a pistol and shoot at the engine of the boat in order to stop it and maroon her on the water. And I said to you, Marianna, no, you know, you've created this villain who's so diabolical and so perfect. Faye's just got to kill her.
Yes, yeah.
And so you did. It was hard for you, wasn't it?
It was very hard. It's because I wasn't sure people would want to see Faye kill somebody. And but, you know, she needed killing. She really did. And Faye, you know, Faye suffered over it. She didn't want to kill her either. But
no.
But
we had a talk, and I got to thinking about it, you know, as an editor, that there is some ethical responsibility. If you've really created a monster,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, it's not fair to let Faye sheer away from that and
mm-hmm.
let society try to deal with it successfully or not. I just don't think that was the moral way to end the book.
Right, I agree. And I will also say that my librarian friends love it that I created such an evil, murderous librarian.
You did. And then subsequently, I don't remember which book this was, but Faye again, or somebody has a killing shot, and I remember you wrote to me and said, "You're going to be so proud of me." So I've turned you into a lethal weapon.
Now.
I know. It's really been so much fun to work with you, Marianna, and I'm looking forward to whatever we do in the future.
I am too.